Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Become your healthiest self. It's time for Talk Healthy Today. Here's Dr. Jeffrey Burke.
You know, today, from fluoride to prescription drugs to lead, what's really in the water you're drinking? I think a lot of us want to know. And how does it affect our health and the health of our families? Environmental toxic expert Andrea Ventura joins me today to expose the contaminants in the water you drink, whether it's from a tap or from a bottle. We might also learn some easy tips for cleaning up our water. Andrea, you know, a lot of people are water drinkers today that never were in the past, and we still have a lot of people that should be drinking a lot of healthy water, but I think a lot of them are, they still haven't put up their sodas and their sports drinks, and they're not ready to drink the water yet like they should be drinking it. So we want to make sure that they have the facts about what kind of water to drink and what's important. And, you know, this one question comes up a lot. Well, I heard there's prescription drugs in my water. How do we address that?
Well, Doctor, that is my favorite topic.
Good.
So I'm so glad you brought that up, because this is something that I work a great deal on at Clean Water Action. So, yes, we have detected prescription drugs at very trace levels in drinking water and in our waterways. In our waterways, they can be at levels that affect aquatic life, so there are environmental problems. In our drinking water, this gets into our water in a number of ways. One is through excretion. When we take medications, the body generally doesn't absorb all of that, and the dose that you're given takes that into consideration. Mm-hmm. And so some of it is excreted out of the body and into wastewater. And wastewater is treated, but it was never meant to be treated for these kinds of chemicals. So while wastewater systems can do a very good job at getting a lot of that out, trace levels of drugs are getting into our water system. But the other problem is how we dispose of medications. And I have a few requests of your listeners. First of all, if you have old medications, expired medications, things you just want to get out of your house so that children or elderly people who may accidentally take them don't get to them, never flush them down the toilet. It's that, like I said, the wastewater system was not meant to take them out, and we're literally putting tons of these things into our waterways that way, because eventually that water is released. It's treated, but it's released into the environment and ends up in our water systems. We also would say that throwing pharmaceuticals of any sort into the trash is a last resort. Because in many cases, it ends up in landfill. And then what happens is it either can leach into groundwater, which is a significant drinking water source for many people, or the liquid in a landfill is siphoned off after it rains. You know, everything collects at the bottom, and those chemicals go through the wastewater system. So it's just the same as flushing them. One of the things that we're doing here in California is We have actually passed, Clean Water Action and some of our allies have passed ordinances in various counties around the state that require pharmaceutical manufacturers to actually implement take-back programs where people can come into a pharmacy or a local police department or some other facility where there are very secure bins and drop off their medications in those bins. And what we're finding is that in cities like San Francisco, for instance, I think it was over a 30-month period, we collected something like 18 tons of medication ended up in San Francisco Bay or our drinking water. So this can be a very useful practice, and we're hoping that other cities around the country and other states or counties will take on these policies as well. It's something called product stewardship, where the manufacturers who sell the products help make sure that those products don't cause environmental or health harm. And that's going to be an important way to keep pharmaceuticals out of our drinking water. The good news, that we're talking about trace levels. So I wouldn't worry about turning on the tap that there might be somebody's heart medication in your water. What I am concerned with is that we need to get a grip on this problem, and that's why Clean Water Action focuses on this particular issue. Because as people use more and more medications, more of that will end up into our water systems. And if we can get the low-hanging fruit, keep that from happening, then we don't have to worry about the long-term effects of these low doses of medications in water. We won't have to worry about the mixtures of chemicals that end up in our water. We can help prevent at least part of that problem at the source.
You know, there's a lot of places where you can go and fill up your own bottles, glass bottles and things like that from stores and storefronts and things like that. Do they use the public water there and then they filter it on top of it? And is that a good choice?
It depends on the machine as to whether they even filter it. But yes, it's the public water system. That machine is plugged into the building. Okay, and it's coming out of a public water source. So it's if it's a store near your house, it's probably the same water that's coming out of your tap. They may have a filter on the machine. It's a good question how well they how well maintained that filter is, how clean the machine is. Is it serviced regularly? We do have a law here in California that my colleague Jennifer Clary at Clean Water Action helped actually pass some years ago that does require some oversight of that. So there has to be a posting on the machine when the last time the filter was changed, if there is one, and how well the machine is maintained. But it's really your tap water coming out of a machine, maybe with an extra filter. So I find it hard to say that that's a great recommendation because, again, you don't know what it's filtering for or what it's doing. It's basically a convenient way to fill up a bottle and not necessarily your best choice.
You know, we've talked a little bit about plastic bottles and things like that. Is BPA still an issue?
It is. BPA is another one of those plasticizer chemicals that has been used in a wide range of things. It's used in plastic bottles. It's also sometimes used in liners in reusable bottles. So that's why my bottle for water is stainless steel without any sort of lining. It's also used in food cans and all sorts of actually plastic products. It has been linked to pretty serious health issues, endocrine disruption, which affects your hormone system, cancer, obesity, cardiac disease. There's reproductive harm that has been linked to BPA. Now, the good news is that given the public's awareness of BPA, many companies are moving away from it in their packaging. And so you'll sometimes see on a bottle of water or on some other kind of container BPA-free. The million-dollar question, though, is what are they using instead?
Right.
Okay, to make the plastic into the shape and molding that they want. And in some cases, they use chemicals that are very similar or actually in the same family as BPA. There's one called BPS, which may actually be more toxic than BPA. So until those chemicals are tested and we know exactly whether they are safer or not, it's kind of hard to know whether a BPA-free container is actually, in fact, safer. Now, BPA would not be used in a glass bottle that you mentioned before, but unless it's maybe in a little bit in the cap. But that would be one way to avoid that chemical.
Now, when we start thinking about chemicals and things like this, it's, you know, a lot of people are into the convenience of water bottles. And, you know, you can get, 24 bottles of water now for about $4 at some of the grocery stores. And a lot of people are looking at that as, you know, just an easy way to remember to take their water. And I think a lot of people just grab plastic water bottles because, you know, it reminds them if they carry it with them to drink their water. And the idea of using one that has to be refilled probably is just not in their mindset. But I think as people start to get a little bit more, you know, aware of what's in the plastic bottles, they'll start carrying, you know, metal bottles and reusable bottles or glass bottles and, you know, and feeling safer with those as well. It's just been such an uphill battle to get people to drink water at all.
You know, I empathize with that. Plus, if it's an emergency and you don't have water with you, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to run into a store and buy it. And I don't want someone to dehydrate. But, you know, I would say to those folks as well, not, you know, first of all, there is the awareness that the plastic is not the best choice for your safety, that you don't know anything about that water for the most part. And you can get information about your tap water. You should be getting a report every year. You should read it and know where your water comes from and what's been found in it and what it means. But I would also suggest that while people are out and about, especially in the summer, if they visit their local lake or the beach or, you know, go hiking in a park, how many of those pieces of plastic are they finding out there?
Oh, sure.
And it can be very startling. What's really horrible about plastic pollution is that plastics don't stay whole like a bottle, okay? When they get out into the ocean or into the sun and they break down over time, what they do is they don't go away. They just become smaller pieces of plastic. And they start collecting other toxins in the environment and they start working their way up the food chain. Animals mistake them for food. Fish eat them, you know, and it goes all the way up the food chain until it ends up on your plate. And so there are a lot of ways to get away from that plastic, and there are a lot of reasons, I should say, to get away from that plastic. And so if it's not you're concerned about the water itself, it certainly should be the trash and the plastic pollution that we're creating.
Remember, you want to stay up to date on each and every show by liking our Facebook page. Follow us on Instagram or Twitter and let us know what your favorite healthy habit is. Then listen in. You might hear it mentioned on the show. For more on water information, water health, the best ways to drink your water, and other health and wellness topics, check out my favorite magazine, Better Nutrition, at your local health food store. Packed with well-researched articles, recipes, and tips, it's an indispensable resource for healthy living. Make sure to pick up your copy today. Today we're talking about water. You definitely want to check out the website of the week, which is cleanwateraction.org, and also the blog, which is blog.cleanwateraction.org. And Andrea, I have a question because, you know, they got these sites where people can go and read more about it. But my question is the standard of water in California the same as it is in New York or Montana and Florida? Is everybody following the same protocol, or does it vary?
So fundamentally, people follow the same protocol, or I should say they have to meet the same standards under the federal law. So those 98 contaminants or chemicals plus pathogens, every state has to make sure that their public water systems meet the legal standards that are meant to protect the public. However, as I said, states can also go beyond the federal government. And so, as I mentioned, for instance, California regulates at least 108 chemicals, some of which are not regulated anywhere else in the United States or maybe in one or two other states. We're in the process of creating a new drinking water standard for a chemical called 123-TCP, which was a byproduct from making a faulty pesticide that has contaminated many of our rural communities in California. The only other place I know of off the top of my head that has regulated that is the state of Hawaii. So in that case, not every state would regulate that. Hexavalent chromium is another example. Perchlorate is another example, where these are not regulated by the federal government, but the state of California has taken action. And that will vary from state to state. So that is different.
You know, a lot of people are living in parts of the country that we are having trouble with water, you know, for either for drinking or for landscaping, and we have water restrictions. I know this is going to be a little bit off the wall, but how do you feel about desalinization plants and using water from the ocean for both drinking and environmental? Does it seem like we're missing the boat here?
I would say, and particularly in a state like California, where we are not only in a mega drought, and yes, the drought is still happening, even though we had a little rain this winter. But I think we also have to recognize that we will need to conserve water forever. The changes we're making are permanent, because we need to be aware of climate change. We need to be aware that while we have some very water-rich parts of our state, that this is an arid state, and this is true of the American West in general. So with that kind of plug in there, that we will always need to conserve, we need a diverse portfolio of water options. And so that would include conservation, that would include water reuse and recycling of water, and desalination is one of the options that certain communities have considered. I will give you the perspective of my perspective as well as that of Clean Water Action, that desalination, while it's valid to be in the diverse portfolio for states like California, is probably the least, or probably my least favorite option. I would put that at the bottom of the list. And here's why. First of all, you know, when you look at environmental solutions, we also have a responsibility to, and actually it's mandated in the legislature, to reduce our energy use and greenhouse gas emissions. And it turns out that desalination is a remarkably energy-intensive, greenhouse gas-heavy technology. It's also probably the most expensive technology out there.
I figured that.
Yeah, it's very, very expensive. I don't know that you get a lot of bang for your buck on that. I think that we can do more regarding conservation. Some of our biggest cities, again, I'll just point to San Francisco as an example, but it's not the only one, have grown in population and are actually using less water than they did years ago with a smaller population. So, you know, there's a lot more efficiencies. We are putting in more technologies in our buildings and in our infrastructure to save water. I think things like permeable surfaces will be important. We need to, you know, make sure we're not paving over anything so we don't lose water down storm drains and back into the ocean. There are a lot of things we can do on that front. And I think there is it's not cheap either, but there's some real opportunities in the area of water reuse, both for drinking water purposes and for landscaping and other options. And I think we have to really look at regional reuse of water as one of the top ways that we are going to move forward. We, of course, have to do it right. We need to make sure it's clean, it's safe for whatever it's used for. But the state is actually putting a lot of energy in looking at the feasibility of that, to keep water local, to keep the solutions local, and to make sure that we're not just looking for new water sources that are going to cost us more in other ways, environmentally and fiscally.
You know, it's funny, my grandmother was from the old school, and she used to wash her dishes in a container inside of her sink, and when she would get done with her dishes, she would take it out back and use it to water her plants on her balcony, and we were in the Midwest, so she used to have big barrels on the corner to catch the rainwater, and she would use that as well. So, I mean, they were doing it back when it was just what they thought they should do, and now we need to think of it more as a as a situation of survival. So different mentality, but some ideas that we could all incorporate as well.
Now, that way of thinking is very exciting to me because it gets us away from the wasteful economy that we have created, whether it's products or water. My mother does the same thing still. She carries her water out and dumps it on her plants. People are flushing their toilets with water from their shower mm-hmm. they've collected. But it's also getting easier. There are buildings going up in our urban areas that have what we call gray water systems, where water from, say, the washing machine or the sink, the kitchen sink, can be rerouted to flush your toilets so that it's fundamentally clean water. There's nothing, you know, seriously bad in that water. And to flush your toilet, it's a perfectly safe thing. So that sort of thing is really growing here in California and other places. And I think there's a lot to be said for those efforts because they're making a difference.
Something we do need to bring up, and I know we're heading up toward the top of the hour here, but mm-hmm. fluoride, something that's talked
fluoride,
about a lot. Yeah, this is talked about a lot.
So fluoride is actually regulated in drinking water, okay? Actually, in California, and federally, it's at, this is going to sound like a big number, but it's not, 2,000 parts per billion. That's actually a very little amount of fluoride. As I'm sure many people know, fluoride is sometimes, it depends on the community, depends on where you live, is actually added to drinking water mm-hmm. because it is perceived as something that helps with dental health, your teeth. That said, there's a lot of conflicting science out there about fluoride, and there are some concerns in the population that there are health implications to it, including problems with the teeth, discoloration of the teeth, ironically, but also more serious problems where people have specific reactions to fluoride. Claymore Action would say that, probably we shouldn't be medicating the public through the drinking water system because today, many other products have fluoride in it, so if you do, it gives you the choice. If you want to brush your teeth with fluoride toothpaste, then you can do that. But at least you have the choice to do that. I would say that there are probably far more serious contaminants in drinking water to worry about. I would be more worried about lead, as in Flint, Michigan. I would be more worried about things like hexavalent chromium or nitrate on a daily basis for most of the population. But one of the things that citizens can do is find out if their drinking water system is adding fluoride, and if they don't want that, they should make that known to their public water system.
Now, one more we have to touch on, because it's going to come up later. They say, why didn't you talk about this? Chlorine.
Chlorine, okay. So kind of the same thing. So, mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, chlorine is also regulated in drinking water because, it's bleach and it's a toxic material. Chlorine is a double-edged sword. Chlorine was probably one of the greatest health innovations in history. I mean, water, there's no such thing as pure water. Even if you get it out of some great pristine lake where there's no industry and no air pollution, animals use water, and they're not always clean. So there are contaminants, there are pathogens in water, and chlorine was initially introduced in water at levels that were considered safe enough to drink, but killed a lot of those pathogens. Some communities don't use chlorine, they use something called chloramines. But in either case, they are, it is a material that needs to be regulated and watched as far as levels. The main problem with chlorine is that when the chlorine mixes with organic materials in water, it could be dirt, it could be leaves, things that came from the original source of the water, they can create another set of chemicals called trihalomethanes, which are basically what we call disinfection byproducts. So the chlorine was put in there to disinfect the water to actually protect you, but it can also react with materials in the water and create these other chemical issues that do have a degree of health concern to them. And so, again, both the U.S. EPA and the state of California actually have standards that that drinking water standards have to meet.
You know, there's so much information about water, and I have to thank you. This has been very enlightening on many, many different levels. And
my pleasure.
I think people are going to walk away feeling, wow, you know what? It's not just about drinking water. It's about drinking clean, healthy water. And they may look at their kitchen tap a little bit differently today, and they may look at those plastic water bottles a little differently as well.
Well, Dr. Jeff, let me just give one last plug then. Again, if you're on a public water system, and many of us are, make sure that you get, it's called a consumer confidence report. And it's basically a water quality report. It will tell you everything that was detected in your water that's regulated. Sometimes it'll tell you things that aren't regulated, what the levels were, and if it was a violation of the law. Most of the time it's not, but sometimes there is. And, you know, really get to know what's in your water. And that helps you make the best choices about what you, you know, about your tap water. It makes you feel, it can make you feel more secure, or it'll tell you that, yeah, you should be filtering your water, or you should be getting other options. But it's a really important thing. We do have a responsibility to protect ourselves, and those reports come out every year. They have to be out by July of every year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really great sources of information.
I'm Dr. Jeffrey Burke, and this is the Talk Healthy Today show on Radio MD. For more information on this and all of my segments, visit my show page at radiomd.com. My thanks to Andrea Ventura from Clean Water Action. Thanks for listening, and stay well.